Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
I hope your Monday is going well. It's Monday, February 24th, 2020, and Wednesday, my goodness, is Ash Wednesday. Tomorrow is Fat Tuesday, or as we call it in southeastern Michigan, Punchki Day, because we have a wonderful Polish-American population, and punchkis are very, very big around here. No, they're not donuts. They're a very specific type of pastry that are filled with all kinds of goodness, whether it's chocolate cream, whether it's custard, whether it's lemon custard, whether it's all kinds of fruits. They're delicious. And they only have about 5,000 calories per punchki. Well, look at it this way. If you're busy tomorrow, you have a punchki, you got your calorie intake all taken care of. There you go. Anywho, tomorrow is what we know in the Catholic faith, or like it's a tradition, Fat Tuesday. And we'll talk a little bit more of that as we get closer to Ash Wednesday. But with all of that in mind, we want to get you ready to think, as always, as Father John Ricardo says, with the mind of Christ, which is what we're supposed to be doing every single day. And with all of the attacks in the culture, which are never-ending, never a dull moment, right, where that is concerned, I want to take a look at some of these stories in the news. Vanessa Denha-Garmo and I do a segment in the first hour of my show about once a month because we're both newsies. We were in the news business for a long, long time, both of us. It's actually where we met and became friends. And so once a month, we come out and we talk about various stories and do our best to show how these stories are truly agenda-driven. And how much, unfortunately, of not only the secular news media, but the culture in general has adopted a lot of these agendas, and they keep pushing it. And this ties in with our very first interview this morning after the news in the break. We're going to be talking with the wonderful folks from Ruha Woods Press, and they do such a great job, and they're based down in Cincinnati, providing solid materials to help young people understand their human dignity, who they are, made in the image and likeness of God, and to stand up to this craziness in our culture by embracing that dignity and sending out a positive message. So we are going to be speaking with the training and development coordinator for Ruha Woods Press, DJ Hineman, and he's going to be joining us about their events that are coming up. They've got some really good programs, and they want to bring in as many people as possible. And these courses and these materials are excellent. If you remember, they were on with me when we were on the Good News Marriage Cruise back in January. We had one of the lovely ladies who joined us, and she was telling me about the programs. And so, heck, I put her on the show, and she did a great job. And she sent me the email reminding me of what was coming up. So I want to make sure we get this out there so you can register, because it's all rooted in theology of the body. And so it's the perfect antidote to what's going on in our culture. The more we can embrace who we are and be positive about the dignity of the human person made in the image and likeness of God, the more difference we are going to make. So DJ will be joining us at 15 minutes past the hour. We'll talk about the training and development sessions coming up and how you may register, and also take your questions and your calls. And then wrapping up with Maureen Ferguson from the Catholic Association. This week, you may have heard, we did speak about it a lot last week, the Senate is set to vote on the pro-life pain capable bill coming up this week, which would prohibit abortion after the baby can feel pain. Now, it's not likely to pass because they need apparently 60 votes. But coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, I believe it's a godsend, a brand new study right out of the UK, the same time all this is going on, telling us that unborn babies may feel pain as early as 13 weeks. So Maureen is going to be joining us from the Catholic Association to talk about this and how we can maybe pick up the phone, email, and call our senators in Washington to let them know how we feel about this measure and how important it is to. I mean, it's like you think about all of this and you're like, I can't even believe we have to bring this up. Or that people are actually thinking that infanticide, leaving a baby who survives an abortion alone to die, is okay. Or that all these things that we're pushing, as we discussed on the program last week, and by the way, had a great response to the discussions with Dr. Fitzgibbons, and also the video we ran from Dr. Cretella, the video that she has that's now, by the way, taken down from Facebook because they consider it, and YouTube because they consider it hate speech, how she was able to treat a boy who came into her office and said he was a girl, And she talks about the therapy that took place and how she got to the root of the issues here. We have a ton of resources that are available. And if you want more information, you can go to actually my Facebook page. And I believe, I'm trying to remember where else, well, we did an e-blast on it this morning. So if you're interested, you can email me and we'll send it out to you. But probably one of the best ways is to just go to my Facebook page at Mrs. Teresa Tomeo, and you'll see the link to it there. If you have trouble finding it, let me know and we'll send it out, because we have a whole list of these videos that we were able to grab, and these are real great educational tools. So anyhow, right now it's 5 minutes past the hour and we have a lot of news to get through this morning too. So let's get to that. We'll take a break and then we'll talk with our friends at Ruha Woods. It is, as I said, 5 minutes past the hour. It's a Monday morning. It is February 21st, 2020. Well, authorities in Nigeria say at least 5 churches have now been destroyed in a major attack by Boko Haram militants. They said more than 100 militants opened fire sporadically and indiscriminately on churches and houses Friday evening. The local annual Catholic Women's Conference there was also set to start Friday. Authorities say the attack happened as many of the women were arriving for the event. Authorities have only said many Christians were killed during the attacks. Federal and local authorities are investigating after 18 Jewish community centers across New York targeted with bomb threats yesterday. At least one center in New Jersey also targeted. The threats were emailed, none found to be credible. In Albany, more than 100 people evacuated from a center Sunday morning as police swept the building. The FBI and the Homeland Security Office notified of those threats. In 2017, more than 10 Jewish community centers across the nation were evacuated following a series of threats. In his message for Lent 2020, the Pope, pointing to the Paschal mystery, the mystery of our Lord's passion, death, and resurrection, as the basis of conversion. The message bearing the title, "We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God," a quote from St. Paul's second letter to the Corinthians. This kerygma, the fundamental proclamation of the gospel message, sums up the mystery of a love so real, he says, so true, so concrete, that it invites us to a relationship of openness and dialogue. The Pope also says, whoever believes this message rejects a lie that our life is ours to do as we will. Pope Francis says that during this season of Lent, he wants to invite the faithful to fix their eyes on the crucified Lord and allow ourselves to be saved, I love this, over and over again. He said, our Lord's passion, death, and resurrection is not a past event, rather through the power of the Holy Spirit is ever present, enabling us to see and to touch with faith the flesh of Christ, especially in those who suffer. In other news this morning, the big story is the latest on the coronavirus. Mark Mayfield says it's expected that Congress will soon be asking to approve emergency funding for the outbreak.
Politico reports that the money could total up to $1 billion to stop the respiratory illness from spreading in the U.S. However, Politico was told by a White House official that the amount requested may change. More than 24 countries are dealing with cases of the virus known as COVID-19. Nearly 2,500 people have been killed by the virus.
Meanwhile, global stock markets are falling after a surge in the cases of the virus, both in Italy and South Korea. In the U.S., Dow futures down more than 800 points or more than 2.7% ahead of markets opening. NASDAQ futures down 3.3%. The S&P 500 also down 2.7%. And Bob Brown tells us the guardian angels are patrolling Chinatown in the Big Apple in an effort to ease fears and protect against harassment over the virus.
The guardian angels are patrolling Chinatown and handing out leaflets to help ease fear and anxiety over growth and spread of the coronavirus worldwide. Many Asian Americans are being looked at as possible disease carriers and are being harassed and verbally abused for wearing protective masks. Restaurants are also taking a big hit, with customers staying away in droves. Meantime, the angels plan to make their presence in the heavily populated Asian American communities of Sunset Park, Brooklyn, and Flushing.
In other news this morning, snowstorms and thunderstorms will collide over the Midwest this week, bringing heavy snow. A snow system sweeping over the northern plains, expected to clash big time with a rain system moving up from the Gulf Coast today through Wednesday. The National Weather Service saying fierce winter weather will hit the Great Lakes and the Midwest, beginning with a band of moderate snow and turning into some pretty heavy snow by tomorrow morning. Winter storm watches have been issued for Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin. President Trump making his first official visit to India. He addressed a packed house during a rally overnight at the world's largest cricket stadium.
The story of the Indian nation is a tale of astounding progress, a miracle of democracy, extraordinary diversity, and above all, a strong and noble people.
The rally is the first event to be held at the venue that seats around 110,000. It was billed as a sequel to the Texas rally held last year when 50,000 Indian Americans greeted the Indian Prime Minister on his visit. Before leaving India tomorrow, the president will also visit the Taj Mahal and meet with business leaders. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, as Mike Bauer tells us, winning the Nevada caucuses and is expected to receive the bulk of the state's delegates.
Joe Biden finished well behind Bernie Sanders, who had collected 47.1% of the vote on Sunday evening. Pete Buttigieg, the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, was in third with 13.6%. Candidates have to hit 15% both statewide and in congressional districts to receive a share of Nevada's 36 pledged delegates to the Democratic National Convention. Citing irregularities in both results, Pete Buttigieg's campaign questioned his third place finish in Nevada caucuses and called for the state's Democrats to release a more detailed breakdown of votes and address reports of more than 200 problems allocating votes Saturday.
A top House Democrat very concerned about having Bernie Sanders as the party's nominee.
It'll be an extra burden for us to have to carry. This is South Carolina, and South Carolinians are pretty leery about that title. Socialist.
On ABC's This Week, House Majority Whip James Clyburn talking about the Vermont senator being a Democratic socialist, a South Carolina congressman, citing the party's success back in toss-up in Republican districts and the 2018 midterm elections that helped Dems take back the House. Now, Sanders will look to build on his momentum in the South Carolina primary next weekend, coming off his win in the Nevada caucuses. Scott Pringle explains that jury deliberations continue in the Harvey Weinstein sex crimes trial in Lower Manhattan.
Well, the jury said they were deadlocked on two counts of the most serious charge, a predatory sexual assault on Friday. A note by the jury read, "We, the jury, ask if we can be hung on counts 1 and 3 and unanimous on the others." But the judge ordered them to keep going, and they'll do just that this morning. A fifth day of deliberations. Harvey Weinstein, the movie producer, charged with 5 sex crimes, but maintains any sexual encounters were consensual.
Jussie Smollett is set to appear in court today in Chicago on new charges accusing him of staging a hate crime against himself last year. Mayor Lori Lightfoot believing the former Empire actor should be held accountable.
He committed a crime, and he needs to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, and we are going to continue to aggressively make him accountable for the wasted police resources that went into investigating what turned out to be a total hoax.
The actor indicted earlier this month on 6 counts of disorderly conduct, claiming he was attacked by 2 men who yelled racist and homophobic slurs at him in Chicago. He was originally charged with making false police reports after authorities say he orchestrated the attack with the help of 2 brothers. But those charges were dropped then by the Cook County Prosecutor's Office, a new indictment brought by a special prosecutor who was appointed to investigate how the Cook County State's Office of the Attorney, Kim Fox, handled the case. And a court hearing is underway today in London to try and figure out if WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange will be extradited to the U.S. Assange, who lived for years in the Ecuadorian embassy in London and published classified U.S. documents, facing 17 espionage charges in the U.S. They're based on his website's publishing of secret military documents. And finding our news segment at 13 minutes past the hour on a Monday morning, fans packing the Staples Center today to say a final farewell to L.A. Lakers legend Kobe Bryant. Reporter Jay Gray has more details on the public memorial service that will be held at the Lakers' home court for Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter, Jana.
The price of tickets to this morning's memorial ranged from $24.02 to $224, another nod to Kobe and Gigi's jersey numbers. The proceeds will benefit Bryant's Mamba and Mambacita Youth Sports Foundation.
They were among 9 people killed in a helicopter crash last month, though the arena only holds 20,000. Those who can't make it in person can watch it on NBA TV, also online via Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. The memorial will start about 45 minutes, at about 1 p.m. Eastern Time or 10 a.m. Pacific Time, so 1 p.m. this afternoon Eastern Time. Almost 15 minutes past the hour now. Hope you're having a beautiful Monday morning moving into the Lenten season. Always another opportunity, if we are still alive, to improve ourselves, right? To be perfect as our Heavenly Father is perfect, as we heard in the readings over the weekend. Coming up, we have an identity crisis, but the church, as always, has the answer. More on that when we come back.
Did you know you were kicking in your mommy's tummy before you were born?
We were?
Yep. I just learned at school that babies move and kick before they're even born.
No wonder we're so good at soccer.
Hello, I'm Marian Kuharski, the director of Pro-Life Across America. We know that conversations about right to life have become very heated, even angry. We stay away from that political fray. We're non-political and totally educational. We don't scream or scold. Instead, we help people working through unplanned pregnancies know their options. We're here to help both mom and the baby, and we rely on people like you to help with our mission. Please call 1-800-366-7773. Check us out on Facebook, YouTube, or at ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception.
Pro-Life Across America, the billboard people.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray here. My newest book, Raising Upright Kids in an Upside Down World, help you stand strong against a culture no longer on your side to identify all of the forces trying to misshape your child. To help you stand strong against those forces, to resist them, to recognize them so you can raise the kind of kid you wish to raise. You can get the new book at AveMariaRadio.net. That is AveMariaRadio.net.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Have an identity crisis. We shouldn't have, because it's so clear what God gives us and how we're made in the image and likeness of God, male and female. But the world says you can be anything you want to be. You feel like a girl one day and you're a boy. You feel like a boy one day and you're a whatever. And it's just very frightening, and we're doing a lot of damage, especially as we discussed on my program last week with Dr. Fitzgibbons, and also on my webinar with Bishop Papraki, who has a beautiful guideline that he's put out for parishes in his diocese, which can be used around the country, and also with Dr. Michelle Cretella from the American College of Pediatricians and Dr. Fitzgibbons, and now our good friends that we've had on before from Ruha Woods Press. We have the answer. We just need to get it into people's hands, and that's why DJ Hineman is going to tell us about some wonderful programs coming up where you can embrace with some great materials theology of the body, especially gender and sexual identity issues. DJ, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Teresa, thanks for having me on.
All right, so what have you seen since Ruha Woods was developed in terms of the need for these types of materials and events to help people explain to young people and to others their identity?
Yeah, so these events, these trainings on really what it means to be a human person, especially when it comes to our gender and sexual identity, they've really kind of blown up for us. We've had to switch venues here and at a larger venue because we've received so many requests from people, and it seems like we're one of the only people here in the nation that are actually approaching these topics. So people are really hungry for it, because as we were speaking before, I mean, the culture is really headed in this direction, and educators, administrators, priests, catechists are going to be facing these really difficult issues, within their own parish, within their own classroom. So they really need to be equipped.
All right, so you have an upcoming training seminar. It's coming up in June, but it's filling up quickly, which is why we wanted to get you on now, so people can take the opportunity to check this out and see if they may be able to register and attend. So tell us about the training sessions coming up.
So here at Rural Woods Press, we're a nonprofit organization, and we've developed the world's first K-12 supplemental theology of the body curriculum. And along with that, we realize that not a lot of people, not a lot of educators, unfortunately, have heard of theology of the body. So we put a lot of emphasis on training educators and helping them understand what theology of the body is, because they hear this and, you know, oftentimes they'll think that theology of the body is simply sex education or something like that. And, you know, we kind of take a step back and say, whoa, 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 when you say, you're partially correct, when you say sex education, sex always first refers to identity before it refers to activity, right? Mm-hmm. So what theology of the body really is, it's humanity 101, right? How to be a human. And so with our three-day intro to theology of the body workshop that we have here in Cincinnati, we focus on educators and administrators and educating them on the content of theology of the body, helping them accept that in their heart, and then have practical grade-level breakout sessions where they can really help to take this gift that they've received and pass it on to their students.
So in terms of the way they pass it on, is that up to them, or do you give them suggestions, DJ, on how to do that?
Yeah, so we bring in, based on their grade level, we bring in teachers that have been teaching our rooted curriculum, and they, you know, it's great because we have people that come, we had somebody from India last year, so people really from all over the world are coming in for this training because they're so hungry because they realize that we need an adequate anthropology, right, of what it means to be human, being able to give this gift to our kids. So through our practical breakout sessions, we give them, through our rooted curriculum, you know, lesson plans already created for them. They're creating lesson plans. They're able to talk with educators from across the U.S. and people that have been teaching this to give them practical suggestions of how to implement mm-hmm. this and how it works alongside with their religion curriculum of what they're already teaching.
So I understand you can accommodate up to about 200 people. Although that's a nice amount, it would be great. Are you going to be offering this then if it gets sold out, maybe an online course or something following this up in case you get so many requests?
Well, we used to do, we were only able to accommodate 70 last year, and we sold out pretty quickly. So we've been able to accommodate 200 this year, and we're expecting to sell out as well. We have plans of possibly offering an online course, but we really want it to be embodied.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see, you know, the experts that we're bringing in, so we have the three-day course, which is the Theology of the Body for Educators, and then alongside that, the Thursday and Friday, we have paired up where you have an optional, you can go to that as well, or standalone training, which is our special topics through the lens of Theology of the Body, and we're focusing on gender and sexual identity for that, and we're really bringing in some great experts from across the U.S. for that.
Can you give us an idea of who the experts are?
Yeah, so, of course, when we're speaking about gender dysphoria, gender and sexual identity, we want to first understand that these are people that we're speaking about. So we want to approach it with truth and with love, with, you know, clarity and charity, as you say, right? So we have Dr. Paul Frus, which I think he was on your program mm-hmm. In the past. So he's an endocrinologist, mm-hmm. and he's been here in the past, and he's done a really great job of approaching this topic through the medical perspective to really help us understand what's going on, through the medical perspective. And then we also have Dr. Joan Kingsland, who's a moral theologian and professor. We have Dr. Ken Craycraft, who is also a moral theologian and professor, but he's also a lawyer. And so he really helps us out to give us the law perspective and the legal perspective, which is really beneficial, especially for educators and administrators that attend the training, to really help them have those valuable insights. Then we have Dr. Andrew Sodergren, who's our lead clinical psychologist here at Rural Woods, to help us give the clinical psychological perspective. And we have Father Tom Ray, who helps us with the pastoral perspective, and Emily Mackey, who is the author of our high school curriculum for Theology of the Body. She'll be joining us as well to give us the kind of the breakdown of the theological perspective mm-hmm. on why gender sexual difference actually matters profoundly for our identity.
Isn't it amazing that we're actually having to teach seminars on this and have webinars and whatnot? When you first got involved in Rural Woods, obviously there was an effort to give the beautiful teaching of theology of the body, but did you ever think it would get to this point where we're at right now in our culture?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the devil's just kind of turned up the heat and stepped full on the gas pedal, but I mean, it's important for us. I forget who it was. Somebody said that when you look at the image of Mary, where she's standing there and she's stepping on the head of the serpent, that serpent tail is flipping around everywhere, causing all this chaos. He said, don't focus on the craziness of the tail that's knocking stuff off the table. He's like, look at the peace of Mary's eyes. She slowly crushes the devil's head.
Yeah.
Well, really, I think the devil's, this is just pathetic death blows. But we have to stay vigilant. And as it says in, Ephesians 6, right, gird your loins in the truth.
Armor of
on
God.
The full armor,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing he says, gird your loins in the truth. And we know that the loins, right, loincloth, is the area of our bodies that distinguishes our sexual difference. And so we really have to dig in and understand God's original plan for why he created human beings male and female, because it's very important. And as we see in the culture now, things that are very important that point to God are being immensely attacked by the devil, who is just desperate to just destroy anything that points to God.
Yeah, it's out of control, and children and women are, we're all suffering from it, but primarily we're seeing children and women are under attack a lot in this whole culture of insanity that we're in right now. When we come back, we'll take some calls. Go to ruhawoodpress.com for more information on the training sessions coming up the 22nd through the 24th, and then the 25th and the 26th. It is limited. It sold out last year. Now, they can more than double the amount of attendees, but I have a feeling, given what's going on, especially this year, just in the last few months of 2020, 2 months now, it's going to fill up. RuhaWoodsPress.com, R-U-A-H, WoodsPress.com. We're with DJ when we come back.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
You as a parent apply Galatians 5, is watch your kids as they move into the religious space, if you want to put it that way. I, you know, made noises about the priesthood on and off when I was a little kid. My parents were never oppressive about it. They never pressed me in that direction, but they would quietly indicate an openness to that, or like, that's a good thing. I remember I still have it upstairs, a Bible that my parents got me for Christmas in 1969. I'm a little kid. And it's, you know, from Mom and Dad to Bob, Christmas 1969. They knew, they sensed I was kind of interested in religious things. So I would say that, don't be pushy, of course, but don't go the other direction. That's, my generation got too much of that, was, back off. Who am I to tell you what to do? You make up your mind. No, I think gently, quietly, affirming that, yeah, that's a good thing you're thinking about. And you should be open to that.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Can a church made up of sinners still be holy? St. Teresa the Little Flower says this about the Catholic Church. If the church was a body composed of different members, it could not lack the noblest of all. It must have a heart, and a heart burning with love. And I realized that this love alone was the true motive force which ennobled the other members of the church to act. If it ceased to function, the apostles would forget to preach the gospel. The martyrs would refuse to shed their blood. Love, in fact, is the vocation which includes all others. It is a universe of its own, comprising all time and space. It is eternal. The Catholic Catechism tells us that our divine Lord, who knew nothing of sin, came only to expiate sin. So the Church embraces sinners in order to save them. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
So how do we counter this huge identity crisis in our nation and our world, even in our church, with many people talking about this? Well, that's why we have wonderful resources that we share with you here on EWTN, including our friends at Ruha Woods Press. They're based in Cincinnati. RUAHWoodsPress.com. So RuhaWoodsPress.com. DJ Hinneman is a training and development coordinator. So how do we register for the upcoming sessions in June?
To register, you just go to RuhaWoodsPress.com. And Ruha is spelled R-U-A-H. By the way, Ruha is the Aramaic word for breath.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Ruha Woods. So RuhaWoodsPress.com. And you just click the training tab up at the top, and all the information is there for you to sign up.
All right, great. So RuhaWoodsPress.com. And you register through the website. I also understand you're offering somewhat of a special for parishes if they want to bring their deacon or priest, correct?
Yeah. We here at Ruha Woods, you know, we create resources for schools, you know, theology body textbooks. But we're really about informing and shaping the entire school and the entire parish. So we want people to get involved. So for a limited time now, if you sign up, two people from your parish, another person, your pastor or teacher champion or adult champion, they get to attend for free. So that's while supplies last, you can sign up now. So it's a really great deal that you can, you know, help to get your whole school involved. So we have these things here. I rule what's press called the Theology of the Body Campus, where schools are now signing up and saying, all right, what our school, what sets us apart as a Catholic school, you know, just doesn't say Catholic on the door. We're a Theology of the Body Campus. And so what that means is we're proclaiming the dignity of every human person with our curriculum, also with things that we do in our mass and with the trainings that our educators and parishioners receive.
And this is occurring. It is something, obviously, we see in our culture almost every day. There's a new story regarding this issue, especially with gender dysphoria, the ideology that's out there, and transgender push and the culture and whatnot. But we're also seeing these issues coming up in our Catholic schools with a story that's been making headlines the last few days. It's what's happening in the Archdiocese of Seattle, where there were teachers at a Catholic school who were same-sex attracted and they were getting married, quote unquote, and of course the diocese had to let them go because they were openly violating church teaching, and the kids protested. I mean, there were petitions and everything else, and the archbishop came out with a very calm but firm statement saying that it's very important for our teachers, those who are in Catholic school, to uphold the teachings of the church. So we're seeing this over and over again. DJ, what are you hearing from Catholic schools across the country in concerns?
Yeah, so I travel for rural woods and host typically one-day trainings on theology of the body for schools. And speaking with educators, it's unfortunate. You never thought that this would come up, you know, 5, 10 years ago. But, now, as early as fifth grade, we're hearing educators that are saying, well, you know, we're having to address some of these things in my specific classroom. So I don't want to be a doomsday person, but I feel like the option is no longer on the table to not address these topics. So how to address these in a way that incorporates truth and love is through the lens of theology of the body. And so, you know, I think that theology of the body is an amazing answer to the cultural crisis that's going on right now.
In terms of what you're doing traveling around the country, do you find that even if you're not there, let's say, to address the transgender issue, that this topic comes up?
Yeah, people are really hungry for it, and I mean, especially if you think about the legal perspective, because it's unfortunate of educators not knowing the proper language to approach this topic with someone pastorally. You can really get yourself into a bind, and it's unfortunate that educators are heroes who are on the front lines are almost at risk with if they don't have the proper training and the proper language to use to really address this pastorally. So that's what we want to focus on here on the 2-day gender and sexual identity course. You'll get a full perspective on this really delicate issue. You'll see it from a lot of different lenses, of course, from the legal perspective, the medical perspective, hearing from a really great clinical psychologist, Dr. Sodegren, on the development and meaning of sexual identity for these young people. And especially for our administrators, if they don't have legal policies and procedures in place within their bylaws and their schools, they really are putting themselves at risk. So they really need to understand how to approach these things and to really have everyone trained and on the same page so that they can be responsible and approach these topics again with truth and with love, but also right. to protect ourselves and make sure that we don't put ourselves in harm's way just because the way that the culture is now can be really unfortunate.
Yeah, there's so much going on in terms of the pushback when you try to preach the truth, and as you said, it's just it is an attack on the human person, and the theology of the body is so key because it talks about male-female complementarity, and the Pope talked about this in his apostolic exhortation that came out following the synod, and he was criticized for that by some of these people pushing these particular agendas, and it's like expecting us more and more, the world trying to push the church to preach something different than the gospel, and we see that. I mean, but it happens. It's kind of like, when are they going to get the clue? But they still try, because I believe they think if they put enough pressure that we'll buy into their agenda of things and put it out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I love the theology of the body, is because it's a great way to approach. So if you look at the catechesis of John Paul II's Theology of the Body, he begins essentially by, in Matthew chapter 19, when Jesus is being questioned by the Pharisees about a really hot-button topic, marriage and divorce. And so what does Jesus do? He doesn't answer the surface level of their question. He takes them back to the beginning and says, from the beginning it was not so. And that's what John Paul II does in his Theology of the Body. He takes us back to the beginning. Let's start there. So this isn't, it's really an easy way to really approach these and talk about these really, really, really difficult and sensitive topics within our classrooms without directly approaching them, but it allows us to go to the root of the issue to really help understand what it means to be human, so that when it comes time to, you know, to approach those really difficult Catholic Church's teachings like gender, sexual identity, chastity, the students that I've seen that have theology of the body as a foundational element, it's almost as if the pieces fall into place. They arrive at the conclusion naturally that the Church's teachings make sense. Like, oh, the Church's teaching on chastity does make sense. Dang it. Wow. Amazing gift that we can give to our kids.
I think everything has to start, and the Pope mentioned this yesterday when he was in Bari with the bishops. I think everything has to start with Christ, with an understanding of who Christ is, because once you have that relationship, and I even said that, I gave a pro-life talk at Sacred Heart Major Seminary 2 weeks ago on how I was able to change my views on the life issues, and I was, before I came back to the church, I was very in support of legalized abortion. Thought I knew everything, I knew zip, zero, nada, but it was all about choice, 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 and a woman's right to choose, and those propaganda words that I bought hook, line, and sinker. But once I entered into this really profound relationship with God, I was much more open to hearing what he had to say. And I think we have to do both. We have to teach the basics first and foremost. And then we have to say, okay, now that you are in a relationship with Christ, this is what this means, and this is what Christ says about who you are, created in his image and likeness. And it's because he loves you, not because he's trying to limit you, just the opposite. When you embrace who you are, as St. Catherine of Siena says, when you are whom you are called to be, you will set the world on fire. DJ, thanks. I hope you pack the place and are in need to get like an 1,000-seat venue, I should say, to fill even more people there. You're doing great work. DJ Hyneman with Rua Woods Press. To register for the upcoming sessions in June, ruawoodspress.com. And DJ is the training and development coordinator for Rua Woods Press, based in the beautiful city of Cincinnati. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Facts for Christianity. It's hard for us to accept that others don't always share our opinion about the authenticity. We debate and argue, hoping to either persuade or discover a new truth. But too often we end up arguing over opinions and not facts. And although our opinions are often facts unto themselves, they're still not facts to anyone else. Arguing opinions is like trying to fill a bucket with no bottom. We need a bottom, something better than opinion to hold up the evidence. We need facts that our opponent will accept. Not just one or two facts, but enough and of the right kind that you'll be prepared to make a reasoned defense to anyone who asks you about the hope and the faith that is within you. Study history and logic and know the facts for Christianity. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
In Making a Holy Lent, 40 Meditations to Prepare You for the Church's Holiest Season, EWTN host Father William Casey offers a compelling retreat designed to help you answer God's call to be people of faith, prayer, and devotion. Grow closer to God this season with Making a Holy Lent, now available at EWTNRC.com or call us at 1-800-854-6316.
Call to Communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Call to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Important vote this week in the Senate. Here to talk about that concerning life issues, Maureen Ferguson, senior fellow with the Catholic Association. The Senate set to vote on the pro-life pain capable bill, which would prohibit abortion after the baby can feel pain. A new study, no coincidence, out of the UK, the same time this discussion is going on with this pain capable bill, finding that unborn babies may feel pain as early as 13 weeks. Maureen, thanks for joining us. So where do we stand? First of all, explain what the measure is and what we're expecting to see in terms of votes.
Sure. So the Senate vote is likely to occur tomorrow.
on the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. And what the bill would essentially do is ban abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy, because there is abundant scientific evidence that the baby by this stage of development is capable of feeling pain. And there's even new research that you just referred to, fresh science out of the UK, led by a pro-choice, a self-described pro-choice researcher, by the way, who's an expert in pain. And this study that was published in the influential Journal of Medical Ethics said that babies are actually potentially able to experience pain as early as 13 weeks. So this pro-choice lead researcher says that he has changed his mind on abortion law. He says society is flirting with moral recklessness to have such permissive abortion laws allowing late-term abortion. Now, he's still pro-choice. He's still for, you know, first trimester abortions. And we, of course, as Catholics, know that from that moment of sperm egg fusion, we have a unique and irrepeatable member of our human family. A new human being is created. So we know that from the very start that the unborn child is deserving of love and protection. But in politics, of course, politics is the art of the possible. So pro-life legislatures are trying to push the line back to 20 weeks, which seems quite modest. But given the nature of our current abortion law, which allows abortion throughout pregnancy for reasons of the artful language of health is used. Of course, the Supreme Court defined health to mean virtually anything related to a woman's well-being, including her age or her family size, financial circumstances, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's what this bill does.
What I think is so alarming is that most people in this country, Maureen, and you know this, identify, even if they call themselves pro-choice, do not want what these extreme bills are calling for. They are, I don't want to say moderate, because no abortion means that you're moderate. I mean, every abortion is murder. But in the sense that they're not even aware, I think, in some cases, of what these measures are calling for, or even what Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton gave us, abortion on demand through 9 months of pregnancy. And when you see the surveys that come out, most people say they want parental consent, they want restrictions. And there's a small percentage who are pushing for what these lawmakers are pushing for in Congress.
And really, it's the status quo that these late-term abortions are allowed. Over the weekend, I was writing an op-ed on this topic in anticipation of the vote, and I just did quick research in the Washington, D.C. area. And simple Google searches show that there are four clinics just in the D.C. area that openly advertise elective late-term abortions in the second trimester, in the third trimester, and that's right there in the shadow of the Capitol, you know, within a stone's throw of the Senate chambers where they're going to be voting this. But yet you'll have senator after senator saying, oh, these abortions are so rare. They only happen in these really tough circumstances where there's a fetal or maternal health complication. And, of course, we know from the abortion lobby that sadly most of these later term abortions are done for very similar reasons that earlier term abortions are done. Often in a later abortion, somebody didn't recognize they were pregnant until much later. Perhaps they were young and tried to hide it for a long time. Sadly, these circumstances are often, you know, there's an abusive boyfriend or some right. boyfriend that means to leave. You know, these are tragic circumstances, but they are late abortions being done on healthy mothers who are carrying healthy babies. And of course, there are those very, very rare circumstances where the baby does have a really tragic and sad diagnosis. But of course, a disabled baby deserves love and care,
right.
you know, not the violent end of abortion. You know, what kind of a compassionate society are we? Do we love our disabled children or do we abort our disabled children?
Yeah.
And of course, in terms of maternal health, when you're talking about later in pregnancy, there is never a reason to kill the baby in order to treat the mother, because later in pregnancy, you can simply deliver the baby alive. The baby can go to the neonatal intensive care unit, and the mother can get whatever treatment she needs. So if there's an emergency health situation with a mother, it doesn't even make medical sense. And, you know, so many OBGYNs have testified to this.
I was just going to say that. OBGYNs have testified, as well as abortionists have testified, saying that, most of the women on whom they perform these late-term abortions are fine. It just was had to do with, health of the mother. Well, that can mean anything. The mother is deciding at the last minute. She's panicking. She feels pressure. This is what people don't realize. They are so into the propaganda, and they put out these phrases and these things that make it seem like we're the ones being unreasonable. Everything is projection to the nth degree.
That's right. And you know what? I think part of it is that hard truths are very difficult to face sometimes. So I think when you watch the media coverage of this, they just repeat the assertions of the you know, abortion promoting folks with no basis in fact. And when you look at the abortion lobby's own data, their own research, if you do a simple Google search, you will see these abortion clinics that are openly advertising purely elective second and third trimester abortions. They say right on their websites, "We won't ask your reason." It's really shocking when you look, when you do the teeniest bit of research. And if these reporters were at all curious about the sort of competing claims on late-term abortion, the truth is very evident and easily found. But they just can't look at it. There's like a cognitive dissonance on it.
Well, I always said that this would be such an easy Pulitzer Prize if they really wanted to look into this. I mean, and look at what happened with Kermit Gosnell. I mean, he was not an outlier, as we know. And then we look at what happened in Indiana and in Illinois with Klopfer and the bodies, and how the media did cover the actual story when it happened. But where's the investigation? If this is happening with this particular abortionist, you know, what does this say for the abortion industry overall, and where are the protections? And the other thing I thought was very interesting, a lot of the mothers were calling pro-life groups in Indiana, and I know this because one of my friends is works for one of those organizations. They were receiving calls where these women were having flashbacks and going through trauma, wondering if that was their baby, if a body of their baby aborted so many years ago was in that garage or in the car, wherever it was found. So if abortion is such a quick thing and no big deal, why are these women calling and feeling all these emotions years later? I mean, there's so much that someone could look into. Just doing a couple of stories on this, but no. Zip, zero, nada. You cover the incident. You maybe mention the fact that they had a burial for the babies. And, of course, they called them fetal matter and also fetuses. They didn't refer to them as babies. These are stories that should be covered, and all the information is there, as you said. You don't have to go very far to look for it.
That's right. I was so struck with they kept using the term fetal remains in coverage of the Klopfer story. And there was another very recent case in Ohio where a young couple ordered abortion drugs online from India and sort of self-induced a late-term abortion. And they didn't know what to do with the baby's body. It's so sad and tragic. They put the baby's body in a shoebox. But a few days later, the woman was bleeding so profusely, she went to the hospital, and then the hospital investigated. They found the body. So it's so, like, this is screaming out to us for our attention. There are little babies' bodies. Fetal remains are what remains after an abortion.
Right.
It's the remains of a little tiny baby. And anyway, so the Senate is going to vote on this pain-capable bill. I would encourage all of your listeners to pick up your phone and just call your two senators' offices. You can go right through the Capitol switchboard. Just tell them what state you're from, and they'll connect you with your two senators' offices. Ask them to vote for the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. You can just, if you can't remember all that, just say, please vote to ban late-term abortions. And it's just really important to note how your senators vote, too, because it's really shocking how many of them will actually defend late-term abortion.
What does it look like now in terms of the vote, Maureen?
Well, here's the deal. So the Senate is controlled by Senator Mitch McConnell, who is very pro-life and a brilliant tactician in the Senate. He's just done an amazing job bringing up pro-life legislation, confirming judges who will uphold pro-life laws, because, of course, abortion is not in our Constitution. But in the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi is right there in bed with the abortion lobby, and she won't even bring this bill up. So the bill has enough votes to pass in the Senate. Sadly, the Democrats will filibuster it, and the House won't even bring it up. Of course, President Trump would love to sign this bill. He highlighted in his State of the Union a case of this little baby girl who was born at 21 weeks and survived. She's now about 2 years old, I think. She was there on the floor of Congress with her mom. So sweet. So there's another example. There's the body. She's now 2 years old. This was, you know, a 21-week-old preterm baby. So sadly, the prospects tomorrow for the bill are not fantastic, but in these human rights struggles, we know it takes a long time. The partial birth abortion bill, it was vetoed by President Clinton many times. Congress just kept coming back at him, overriding. It went up to the Supreme Court eventually, struck down the first time. It made it back up and was finally upheld after it had been signed once we elected a pro-life president in George W. Bush. So these battles go on for a long time, so people shouldn't lose heart. We've got to just keep fighting, keep educating our friends and family on the really tragic nature of our abortion culture.
And use this as an opportunity to educate, to share these stories on social media. I'm sure you'll have statements on your website at the Catholic Association. Where can we find you online?
That's right. Check out our website at thecatholicassociation.org. We also have a new radio show and podcast in partnership with EWTN called Conversations with Consequences.
Oh, I saw that. That's awesome. Yeah,
so check that out, too, if your listeners are, you know, I like to listen to podcasts when I'm driving my kids all around. I spend so much time in the car. But if you're into podcasts, then our EWTN radio show is available on podcast platforms as well. It's called Conversations with Consequence.
You keep up the great work and keep us posted on this vote and others coming up. Maureen Ferguson, Senior Fellow with the Catholic Association and a part of our new program here at EWTN as well. Thanks, Maureen. Bless you.
Great to be on with you. Thanks.
All right, and we'll be right back on Catholic Connection on a Monday morning, letting you know what's coming up on a Tuesday and beyond. Stay tuned.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
This Ave Maria radio program is brought to you in part by Hallo, a new Catholic prayer and meditation app. Hallo has just launched a Pray 40 challenge, featuring daily Lenten meditations on the works of mercy, stations of the cross, and other audio-guided contemplative prayers. You can learn more by texting HALLOW to 66866. That's 66866. It's easier to make daily prayer a habit with Hallo. If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria mutual funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
In the midst of our culture today, in this age of relativism, which wants to grant Jesus some significance, but not so much, so we'll give him wise man, great leader, inspiring preacher, great teacher, prophet. You don't get that option when you claim to be God. What reasons do we have to believe that he is who he said he is? And it's important, again, to employ the use of our reason and to understand that faith is not blind. My faith, and please God, the faith of everyone here, is not blind. It rests on something. It rests on a number of things, not least of which is my own experience of God, but it also has something substantial which can be claimed through history. We're not talking about a galaxy long, long ago, far, far away when we talk about Jesus. We're talking about a precise moment in history which has been testified to by countless testimonies, and you and I have access to them.
Minutes past the hour. Hope your Monday is going well. Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection. And if you're interested in tracking down one of the interviews, we get a lot of requests for that. Someone hears the end of something or they want to share it, which is great because you want to hear the whole thing. You can go to AveMariaRadio.net and just check out our archive section. My amazing producer, Andrew, pulls together all the resources and gives you a description of the various segments of the show. So you don't even have to send the whole show to someone, which sometimes is way too long to listen to if they don't have time because it is a two-hour program, but you can go to the various segments and get the resources you need. So keep that in mind because there's a lot of great information we share with you, not only on the air, but in our archives section at AveMariaRadio.net. Just go to the Catholic Connection archives or the archives for any of our shows that you hear here on the network. A reminder, the Catholic Association will have some more information on their site regarding what's going on in the Senate with the Pain Capable measure. And then also, don't forget the great courses coming up with Ruha Woods. Such great work being done in the Catholic Church. And remember, as we move into Lent, that God has a plan for each of us. And we'll talk more about that as we get closer to Ash Wednesday. Have a great Monday. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Krucek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.